She shook her head. She did not want to think or to wonder why the world behind her was as it was. She did not care. She was flying away from it, at the rate of 100 miles an hour. She leaned to the open window by her side and felt the wind of the speed blowing her hair off her forehead. She lay back conscious of nothing but the pleasure it gave her. Yet her mind kept racing. Broken bits of thought flew past her attention like the telegraph poles by the track. Physical pleasure? She thought. This is a train made of steel, running on rails of Reardon metal, moved by the energy of burning oil and electric generators. It's a physical sensation of physical movement through space. But is that the cause and the meaning of what I now feel? Do they call it a low animal joy? This feeling that I would not care if the rail did break to bits under us now? It won't, but I wouldn't care, because I have experienced this. A low, physical, material, degrading pleasure of the body? She smiled, her eyes closed, the wind streaming through her hair. She opened her eyes and saw that Reardon stood looking down at her. It was the same glance with which he had looked at the rail. She felt her power of volition knocked out by some single dull blow that made her unable to move. She held his eyes, lying back in her chair, the wind pressing the thin cloth of her shirt to her body. He looked away, and she turned again to the sight of the earth tearing open before them. She did not want to think, but the sound of thought went on, like the drone of the motors under the sounds of the engine. She looked at the cab around her. The fine steel mesh of the ceiling, she thought, and the row of rivets in the corner holding sheets of steel sealed together. Who made them? The brute force of men's muscles? Who made it possible for 4 dials and 3 levers in front of Pat Logan to hold the incredible power of the 16 motors behind them and deliver it to the effortless control of one man's hand? These things and the capacity from which they came, was this the pursuit men regarded as evil? Was this what they called an ignoble concern with the physical world? Was this the state of being enslaved by matter? Was this the surrender of man's spirit to his body? She shook her head, as if she wished she could toss the subject out of the window and let it get shattered somewhere along the track. She looked at the sun on the summer fields. She did not have to think, because these questions were only details of a truth she knew and had always known. Let them go past like the telegraph poles. The thing she knew was like the wires flying above in an unbroken line. The words for it, and for this journey, and for her feeling, and for the whole of man's earth were, "It's so simple, and so right." She looked out at the country. She had been aware for some time of the human figures that flashed with an odd regularity at the side of the track, but they went by so fast that she could not grasp their meaning, until, like the squares of a movie film, brief flashes blended into a whole, and she understood it. She had had the track guarded since its completion, but she had not hired the human chain she saw strung out along the right-of-way. A solitary figure stood at every milepost. Some were young schoolboys. Others were so old that the silhouettes of their bodies looked bent against the sky. All of them were armed with anything they had found, from costly rifles to ancient muskets. All of them wore railroad caps. They were the sons of Taggart employees and old railroad men who had retired after a full lifetime of Taggart service. They had come unsummoned to guard this train. As the engine went past him, every man in his turn stood erect, at attention, and raised his gun in a military salute. When she grasped it, she burst out laughing, suddenly with the abruptness of a cry. She laughed, shaking like a child. It sounded like sobs of deliverance. Pat Logan nodded to her with a faint smile. He had noted the guard of honor long ago. She leaned to the open window, and her arms swept in wide curves of triumph, waving to the men by the track. On the crest of a distant hill, she saw a crowd of people, their arms swinging against the sky. The gray houses of a village were scattered through a valley below, as if dropped there once and forgotten. The roof line slanted, sagging, and the years had washed away the color of the walls. Perhaps generations had lived there, with nothing to mark the passage of their days but the movement of the sun from east to west. Now these men had climbed the hill to see a silver-headed comet cut through their plains like the sound of a bugle through a long wait of silence. As houses began to come more frequently, closer to the track, she saw people at the windows, on the porches, on distant roofs. She saw crowds blocking the roads at grade crossings. The roads went sweeping past, like the spokes of a fan, and she could not distinguish human figures, only their arms greeting the train like branches waving in the wind of its speed. They stood under the swinging red lights of warning signals, under the signs saying stop, look, listen. The station past which they flew as they went through a town at 100 miles an hour was a swaying sculpture of people from platform to roof. She caught the flicker of waving arms, of hats tossed in the air, of something flung against the side of the engine, which was a bunch of flowers. As the miles clicked past them, the towns went by, with the stations at which they did not stop, with the crowds of people who had come only to see, to cheer, and to hope. She saw garlands of flowers under the sooted eaves of old station buildings, and bunting of red, white, and blue on the time-eaten walls. It was like the pictures she had seen, and envied, in schoolbook histories of railroads, from the era when people gathered to greet the first run of a train. It was like the age when Nat Taggart moved across the country, and the stops along his way were marked by men eager for the sight of achievement. That age, she had thought, was gone. Generations had passed, with no event to greet anywhere, with nothing to see but the cracks lengthening year by year on the walls built by Nat Taggart. Yet men came again, as they had come in his time, drawn by the same response. She glanced at Reardon. He stood against the wall, unaware of the crowds, indifferent to admiration. He was watching the performance of track and train with an expert's intensity of professional interest. His bearing suggested that he would kick aside as irrelevant any thought such as, they like it, when the thought ringing in his mind was, it works. His tall figure in the single gray of slacks and shirt looked as if his body were stripped for action. The slacks stressed the long lines of his legs, the light firm posture of standing without effort, or being ready to swing forward at an instant's notice. The short sleeves stressed the gaunt strength of his arms. The open shirt bared the tight skin of his chest. She turned away, realizing suddenly that she had been glancing back at him too often. But this day had no ties to past or future. Her thoughts were cut off from implications. She saw no further meaning, only the immediate intensity of the feeling that she was imprisoned with him, sealed together in the same cube of air. The closeness of his presence underscoring her awareness of this day, as his rails underscored the flight of the train. She turned deliberately and glanced back. He was looking at her. He did not turn away, but held her glance, coldly and with full intention. She smiled defiantly, not letting herself know the full meaning of her smile, knowing only that it was the sharpest blow she could strike at his inflexible face. She felt a sudden desire to see him trembling, to tear a cry out of him. She turned her head away slowly, feeling a reckless amusement, wondering why she found it difficult to breathe. She sat leaning back in her chair, looking ahead, knowing that he was as aware of her as she was of him. She found pleasure in the special self-consciousness it gave her. When she crossed her legs, when she leaned on her arm against the windowsill, when she brushed her hair off her forehead, every movement of her body was underscored by a feeling, the unadmitted words for which were, "Is he seeing it?" The towns had been left behind. The track was rising through a country growing more grimly reluctant to permit approach. The rails kept vanishing behind curves, and the ridges of hills kept moving closer, as if the plains were being folded into pleats. The flat stone shelves of Colorado were advancing to the edge of the track, and the distant reaches of the sky were shrinking into waves of bluish mountains. Far ahead they saw a mist of smoke over factory chimneys, then the web of a power station, and the lone needle of a steel structure. They were approaching Denver.